Welcome to the IGIS Institute Sounds of Safety podcast, where our community will be delving into a series of critical issues supporting the public sector mission space. In this episode, we delve into the people, processes, and partnerships that drive a successful OMS implementation. Joining us once again is our expert, recurring panel from the IGIS Corrections Advisory Committee, Rick Davis, Lynn Ayala, Jerry Brenniger, and Krista Murray. Together, they uncover what really happens behind the scenes of OMS rollouts, organizational change management, supporting IT teams through transformational shifts, and determining the right balance between in-house expertise and contracted support. Listen in as they unpack what it takes to establish a long-lasting OMS partnership, align project management across diverse teams, and create effective vendor and contract governance frameworks.
Let's turn our attention now to organization change management. You know, when we implemented our offender management system at the Virginia Department of Corrections, I absolutely had no idea about the amount of consternation that we were going to receive about retiring a set of legacy offender management systems and replacing it with a modern solution. So if there's a single piece of advice that I could convey as part of this podcast, is that correction agencies and local jails who are implementing a new modern system is you absolutely have to invest in change management practices. So Jerry, I'm going to call upon you again. Talk to our listeners about some of the change management hurdles that we're going to face in a project of this kind of magnitude, and maybe what are some of the tactical approaches or frameworks that are effective in a corrections environment for change management?
Yeah, I think you've already identified it, Rick. The biggest hurdle is acceptance of the change or buy-in. I was prepping for this episode. I was looking back through some surveys we conducted at the beginning of our modernization effort, just kind of get an initial assessment of the agency's awareness. We ask questions like, I understand the business reasons for changing to a new system. And, I understand the risks of not changing to a new system, but had fairly low percentages of response of that awareness, but not completely unusual at the beginning of the effort. And I think that kind of initial assessment helps paint the landscape of where your users are and can help focus your following efforts. In terms of tactical approaches or frameworks, as I mentioned a bit ago, I would also include a budgeting line item for OCM. These are important tasks. Often you don't have internal resources that have the time for this. So having a line item for OCM and perhaps contracting that out, if you don't have someone who can focus directly on this to the extent that it needs to be, I think is a good idea. From my perspective, we definitely did not have the resources in-house. So I think, again, tactical approach, just like any other part of the project, you create an OCM plan. Like the other parts of project management planning, you revisit it, you elaborate it over time in the same type of way, and then you follow it. For our modernization efforts, we utilized the PROCI methodology for change management. And some of the specific activities that we went through, I mentioned the surveys, that initial awareness surveys at the start of the project. And we had like a web version, and then we had kiosks at each facility, for those without dedicated computers. We followed up with additional periodic surveys throughout the effort just to kind of gauge our improvement as we moved along. We held interviews with key stakeholders and used that information to kind of tailor approach for awareness and inclusion efforts. We recorded informational videos from executive leadership that outlined the importance of the effort and everyone's involvement. One of the kind of fun things that we did was after we went through those, we included a bloopers release once we were finished, and that was good for some laughs. And I watched some of those again as prep for this meeting, and I'd kind of forgotten how funny they were and how many of those outtakes were actually mine. So we had a quarterly project newsletter where we had, leaders from adult prisons, probation and parole wrote articles about, where we're at, what sorts of activities we're at, the forward momentum. We travel to facilities, we call them our road shows, to present changes to the user communities, you know, including pictures of staff that we put in our newsletter. We minted challenge coins and distributed those throughout the project. And we also had a contest for naming the system. And our internal winning name ended up being Omni. This was another fun activity. And the winner was awarded some administrative leave. So all of these activities were focused drivers to help people accept and start to want the change. Being able to include those resources at the right time through requirements, gathering, configuration tasks, testing, and training, all of those helped increase knowledge for the new system and the end user perspective as well, and what the system needs to do from the vendor and internal IT perspectives. And I think this ongoing reinforcement through those activities was also really key to change management.
You know, Jerry, I think those are outstanding tactical approaches for handling change management. I'll tell you one in Virginia that was really, really effective. You know, you touched on this several times, and Lynn has talked about it, and Krista. You know, none of us can communicate enough about the change. When you think you've done enough communication, you still haven't done enough. And so every time there was a unit head meeting, if there was a regional meeting, if there was even just a staff meeting at a probation parole office, we would try to send somebody from the project to attend, talk about the project, the progress. We were running into issues, and it gave folks a chance to ask questions, and it really, really helped us with change management. But I really liked y'all's approaches, especially anything with funds. So Lynn, one area that we haven't really touched on in this discussion so far, and it's a very difficult topic in regards to change management and how it impacts the IT staff within a correction agency. You know, without a doubt, many of the staff that are there at the agency, the IT staff, is they're maintaining those legacy systems, and their job is going to change dramatically after go live of the new system. So without a doubt, it impacts them greatly and the future work that they'll do for the agency. So Lynn, can you talk to us about how agencies should address IT change management?
Yes, Rick, and you hit the nail on the head, as they say. I've said this before and I'll say it again. IT people are people too. And a lot of times an agency's change management efforts don't consider the amount of change that it's going to bring on the IT division or department itself. And particularly in terms of the way that service requests are handled, the way that the types of skills and abilities that your IT support staff are required to have. And for example, back when we implemented our first OMS, web-based application, all of our programmers, as you can imagine, were COBOL mainframe programmers. So they were concerned. There were still a lot of mainframe programs that were not replaced, but a significant portion were replaced with this newfangled web-based system that we called OMS. And so there was some concern that they were going to lose their job. So one of the things that we really have to take into consideration is we need to do an assessment of our current IT practices and processes, do a skills assessment. You need change champions within your IT organization, just like you do within the business process areas. Ironically enough, some of the biggest change resistors may come out of the IT department. So it's important to recognize that and to get them on board early and help them understand how their job's going to change. The plan is not for them to lose their jobs, but provide opportunities for them to be retrained, to learn new skills, to learn new technologies, and be a part of this transformation and not a victim to the transformation that's going to happen in the IT department. In particular, identifying what those trainings are that are going to be required, what knowledge transfer is required. In many cases, they are the keepers of the knowledge. They're the keepers of the keys to the kingdom, if you will. And business users rely on the IT staff and the programmers and analysts to know how their systems function and to know where those pain points are and to know what needs to be fixed. So it's extremely important that the IT staff become partners with the business when they're going through this transformation process, and that they're a part of the change management plan and the change management strategy. The agencies, as I mentioned earlier, I think in terms of like their service desk and how they take help calls for assistance, calls for requests for new features and functions is likely going to change. And so having that transition plan in place as a part of the change management efforts, having them have a seat at the table and understand what those implications are, they have a lot of ideas and insights into ways that the processes that work in IT could be improved. So I guess to repeat myself one more time, it's important to get them on board early so that if some of them are resistant to the change, that you have an opportunity to provide them with an alternative to just resisting the change, that you provide them with an alternative to have some training to become a part of this new world that we're going to be living in when the new OMS gets implemented. I think it's extremely important because unless the plan is to outsource the entire thing, which typically isn't realistic either, they have to be a part of the team. And I think I read this many years ago, and I think it's still true. Every team is going to go through those phases, right? Forming, storming, norming, and performing. And that includes the IT staff as well as the business users that are going to be a part of the team.
Yeah, really nicely said, Lynn. I'm going to come back to you in a minute here with a follow-up question. But before I do, Barry, I know you had to deal with this in New Mexico's Department of Corrections. What other considerations would you consider for IT change management?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. And Lynn took the words right out of my mouth. You know, often IT is not considered part of OCM, or at least not handled as formally. But you definitely have to address what's changing for IT too. You have paradigms and perceptions, particularly you have application developers that have been, you know, developing, you know, whether it's COBOL or, you know, some client server based language, you know, for years. So when you're moving from an internally developed scenario to a COTS environment, you may have staff that is not excited about that shift because they may have questions and concerns, like Lynn mentioned. You know, if I'm not writing code, what's left for me to do? You know, and it's funny, as I was saying this, I think we're going through some of the same sorts of things with AI now. You know, if we're using this, you know, what's left for the actual people to do? But digressing there, so I think that handling IT as part of the effort early on is absolutely important and needs to be handled in a similar way. And the same sorts of discussions through time and acceptance can grow when your IT team can see there's still so much for them to do, whether it's handling configuration maintenance, you know, writing RESTful APIs or data extracts to integrate with other systems, new reports, and having the actual time to grow like data analytics or other systems that have been coded or internally developed. You know, there's a lot of time that can be shifted to those things that historically they've never really had time to do because the focus has been on the internally developed OMS to that point.
Lynn, you know, you touched on this point in your response, and that was about using in-house resources and maybe some contracted experts for change management. I have to say, in Virginia, we actually requested funding for change management. And sadly, as part of the project of final funding submission to us, that they removed that funding request from us and we had to use all in-house resources. So let me ask your opinion, you know, based on, you know, what Jerry's talked about and your knowledge of this, what do you think? Is it best to try to get through a project like this using in-house change management resources, or should you look abroad, you know, at the experts out there in the industry who do change management as a living or as a profession?
Yes. And I have had experience with three, I believe, different vendors and their change management methodologies over the course of the years. And in a nutshell, from my perspective, I think contractors can be very important to the success of an OMS implementation and the change management aspects of it. They can provide the methodology, they can provide the tools, and they can provide different techniques to be used. But at the end of the day, they can't be the ones that deliver the message. The leadership for change management efforts has to be from inside. It has to be someone that's high enough placed in the organization. And it may not be the executive sponsor. It may be someone that works for the executive sponsor that is in tune with the executive sponsor. So they're all on the same page. But I think there's a misunderstanding if the thought is, or the concern is, that a vendor is going to come in and change you. That's not going to happen. They don't have any real credibility, or staff will likely look at these vendors and think, well, you don't have any skin in this game, so you can't possibly lead this change effort. I think they can be partners with the agency. And again, as I said, to particularly in terms of providing a standard, you know, easy to follow methodology and some tools that could be very helpful, because they do have that experience. They do have that knowledge. They do have best practices. They do have lessons learned from other implementations that they can bring to the table. So there's no reason for, you know, for an agency to repeat some of the same mistakes if you have a contractor that can come in with that experience and tell you where the pitfalls are, tell you which things to do, which things not to do, where to focus your efforts, but stay primarily kind of in the background, if you will, in terms of delivering the message. Help the agency figure out how to frame the message, maybe the best mechanisms to deliver the message, so it's not a one size fits all, but the message has to be delivered by the agency leadership itself, I think, to really get that buy-in and to make sure that that message is getting across to all of the stakeholders. And I would say that both internally and externally.
Well, thank you, Lynn and Jerry, for your thoughts on change management. Let's move along to long-term partnership with our offender management provider. So I'm going to pick on you again, Lynn, here. So what should a correction agency look for in a technology partner to ensure the long-term success of the offender management system and how that system is going to evolve over time?
Yes, it's so important, especially in the world that we're in today, these opportunities to look at. There are a number of COTS packages out there that can satisfy an agency's requirements for a new OMS. But in terms of developing a long-term relationship, I've come up with a bulleted list of what I think are some key indicators of success when an agency is looking for a technology partner and not just a vendor. And these aren't in any particular order. It's just these are the things that I think are going to be really important to take into consideration. And the vendor's knowledge of and experience with the corrections industry, that can't be overstated. Their current portfolio of projects and whether they have a long-term strategic vision for the company that includes these OMS solutions are a part of it. Their reputation, do they have satisfied customers? Do they have ongoing relationships with those customers? Their reliability. This is something I learned in the fourth grade. My fourth grade teacher used to say this all the time. Do they say what they mean, and do they do what they say? So don't make promises you can't keep. Don't overpromise and underdeliver. And if there's a vendor that's done that, there will be a track record. And I think that's something that agencies need to look at when they're looking for a technology partner that's going to be able to ensure a long-term success. Our financial stability, of course, and the company's depth. One of the things that we used to look at is like, where are the headquarters located? And that's not as big a factor now just because of technology, but I think it's still important to take that into consideration. Once we came through what we all refer to, or I refer to, as the COVID years, and we weren't locked down anymore and transportation opened up again, we need to be able to have some face-to-face conversations with these staff, with their company leaders, and with the people on the team. It's real important to establish those one-on-one communications and keep those communications going. How many employees do they have and at what levels, and how much outsourcing do they use themselves versus using in-house resources? Because the company's staff, as we were talking about change management within our organizations, a company's staff, they're people too. And they need to have knowledge of that company's guiding principles, what their processes and procedures are. I'd like to say vendor people are people too. And they need to have buy-in. They need to understand the people that we're going to have a relationship with in terms of the vendors that we select. We need to be able to form a strong bond with them and understand and establish that trust. And one of the ways that we do it is by looking at their staff and see how well those staff are aligned with that organization's strategic plan, with their approach, with their methods. I've been involved on another project in the past where they hired people just for this project that we were working on, and they clearly had no real connection to that company. And that, to me, that's a red flag. They need to be willing to negotiate, and they understand that risk any project is going to come with risk, but they understand that that risk has to be shared, and it needs to be shared as equally as possible. It's never 100% equal, but it's not something that should be taken lightly. I believe, you know, there needs to be some understanding and recognition that that risk needs to be shared if we want to have some kind of long-term partnership. And then last, and again, as I said, these aren't in any particular order, but we need to look at who they have partnered with in the past and to what extent it's been successful. So that's one of the reasons why, you know, we talk to references that they provide and talk to some other folks, some other organizations that have used their services, and get a really good feel for how well that relationship has worked and whether or not it's going to be a fit for our organization in terms of how we function, what our standards and goals and our mission is. And I think it's going to be real important to establish a long-term relationship.
Thank you so much, Lynn. You know, listening to your words of wisdom here, it really does come down to just trust of that partner. So I think you've raised some great points. So Jerry, how do you build this collaborative professional relationship that lasts beyond just the go live of the system, since you are going to be long-term partners with them?
Yeah, so at a management level, you need to be able to discuss progress of ongoing activities so you can address the concerns and challenges. At the SME and IT level, discussing ongoing production issues, how the application can be used, configured to better support or meet the business processes. And I think, and this goes a little bit back to, you know, what to look for. And Lynn provided, you know, lots of really great examples in her bulleted list of this. But I think, you know, this kind of fits both into what to look for and in the collaborative relationship category. How is that vendor, you know, what is their vision in terms of a roadmap or a growth plan for the OMS? So I think that collaborative relationship of a vendor, including customer priorities, joint planning, strategy development, and monitoring that as you look to the future as to where should the system go next.
Absolutely, Jerry. Good job. You know, at the core of any of these major offender management or jail management system implementations, you know, we have a lot of project management considerations that go along with managing, coordinating, and leading these projects. So, Krista, how should internal DOC project managers, as well as our vendor, our partner here, coordinate together so they stay aligned on the ultimate goal of the project, which is for it to go live and be able to grow as the agency grows?
Well, I think it's important to have the right mix of operational and technical expertise. But just as critical is how internal DOC project managers and project managers work together, as you said, Rick. That relationship really sets the tone for how smooth or chaotic that implementation will be. So the key is alignment and transparency, in my opinion. Both project managers need to see themselves as partners, not as two sides of a contract. The internal PM represents the department's priorities, policies, and operational realities, while that vendor PM brings expertise in the technology configuration and system delivery. When they're working in sync, they can anticipate issues before they become major problems. One of the best ways to keep that alignment is through structured coordination. That usually means having a clear communication plan with standing weekly meetings, shared project dashboards, and documented decision logs. These tools help both those PMs stay on the same page about progress, risks, and what's coming next. It's also important to define roles early on. The DOC PM should lead internal coordination by making sure subject matter experts, IT staff, and leadership are engaged when needed, while the vendor PM oversees the technical timeline, development tasks, and testing milestones. Each has authority in their lane, but they can collaborate closely where those lanes intersect. Another piece that often gets overlooked is escalation. Both PMs should agree on how issues get raised, who makes final decisions, and how changes to scope or timelines are handled. Having those processes in place early builds trust, as has been our theme, and keeps disagreements from derailing the partnership. Continuity matters too, as we've kind of discussed. If either project manager changes midstream, there has to be a strong transition process. Sharing documentation, meeting notes, and historical decisions so that the new person doesn't have to rebuild relationships or relearn context. When internal and vendor PMs operate as a unified front, it creates consistency across communication, decision-making, and accountability. And that alignment doesn't just make the project easier, it builds confidence across the whole organization that the work is being managed effectively on both sides.
Yeah, absolutely, Krista. And I like that. Maybe we'll call this podcast the trust theme. So that's great. So Jerry, Krista did an amazing job of discussing the keys to maintaining those clear roles between, you know, DOC and the vendor provider, the responsibilities and the accountability. What else would you add?
Yeah, well, Krista said almost everything there, I think. So I completely agree with it. And, you know, her comments about coordination and being unified, you know, kind of makes me think of an example, you know, alignment between internal and external PMs, like a three-legged race. So like each individual has their one own leg that can move independently back and forth and to each side. But it's really only through the connected leg that's shared and collectively coordinated that you can have forward momentum. And I think it's the same in a project. You have to have that constant communication and coordination between the PMs to keep that alignment alive. You know, otherwise teams are working in silos, maybe going in different directions that are counterintuitive or counterproductive, and definitely not accomplishing the goal. So that communication needs to be fairly constant. I mean, daily for sure, but then based on what's going on, you know, maybe even more, you know, hourly, just depending. It's confusing. It's potentially contradictory without it. You know, the other things that Krista said, you know, I completely agree with as well in terms of escalation procedures.
Well, thank you, Jerry. You know, the last topic that we as a team want to cover as part of this podcast episode is talk about vendor and contract management. But Chris, I'm going to throw this back over to you, get your opinion. What strategies do you believe will help the correction agencies to manage those vendor relationships more effectively? You talked a little bit about this in your project management, but maybe you could tell us a little bit more.
Well, you know, as I mentioned before, having the strong coordination between the internal and vendor project managers is critical. But that coordination is really part of a bigger picture, which is managing the vendor relationship as a whole. That's one area where agencies can either build a true partnership or end up constantly putting out fires. One of the biggest strategies for managing vendor relationships effectively is setting those clear expectations early and documenting everything. The contract should outline not just the deliverables and timelines, but also communication routines, escalation paths, and how success will actually be measured. It's not about micromanaging, it's about clarity. Agencies that do this well also focus on maintaining open, consistent communication. Regular status meetings, progress reports, and decision logs keep both sides accountable and prevent surprises. When everyone sees the same information, it builds trust and makes collaboration easier. One other piece that I'd like to mention is about using milestones to set expectations as well as payments within it, because with having milestones such as that, you can have the celebration of the success, but also there's a clear expectation that when that milestone gets completed, then a payment as part of that contract happens. Another important piece is treating the vendor as a partner rather than just a contractor. We call them vendor partners here. That means sharing operational context and inviting them into discussions about real challenges. When vendors understand the why behind the work, not just the what, they can often come up with better, more sustainable solutions. At the same time, agencies have to be willing to hold vendors accountable. That might mean tracking performance against key milestones, monitoring change requests closely, and not being afraid to push back if deliverables don't meet standards. Strong project governance, such as having a steering committee or executive sponsor, helps reinforce that balance between collaboration and accountability. Continuity, again, plays a big role. When the same agency staff consistently work with the vendor throughout the project, it builds relationships, reduces miscommunication, and ensures lessons learned carry through each phase. So successful vendor management really comes down to three things: clear expectations, consistent communication, and mutual respect. When those pieces are in place, it stops being us versus them and starts feeling like a shared mission to get the system right.
Krista, I love those 3 points. That is spot on. Barry, what else would you add?
Well, I think Krista covered it. And, you know, I was thinking about this and I feel a bit like a broken record, but, you know, saying communication is key. I think also, in terms of that collaboration, you know, knowing when to push and when not to, and responsivity also. So knowing, you know, at my level, when an issue rises to me, that I can make a call to get vendor resources working on something that's critical. And that goes a really, really long way in both getting the issues addressed timely, obviously, but also projecting, you know, that thought that Krista mentioned, that enforcing that we're in it together mentality.
Thanks, Jerry. So Lynn, I'm going to give you the last word on this topic here. How can strong contract management support better outcomes and minimize risk for a project like an OMS implementation?
Yes, it's so important. This is one of those areas that I've been personally been involved in quite a bit in the last couple of years. When I hear contract management, I don't necessarily think in terms of the vendor. I think in terms of our internal contract management staff, it's really important, I think, to look at it from the, you know, our current processes and procedures. Contract management is more than just, you know, developing the solicitation, supporting the selection of the vendor, and then closing out the contract when it's done. Someone from the contract department, in my opinion, needs to play an active role and be a part of the team throughout the course of the contract with the vendor, and also help establish those relationships, because the vendor is going to have somebody in the background that's intimately familiar with the ins and outs of that contract, every aspect, every term, and every condition. And the agency needs to be in the position to have that same type of support when it comes to managing the contract. We should have somebody from the contracts department that participates on the change control board. I know Jerry mentioned a little bit earlier, and I think so did Krista, the fact that there will be changes. It is going to happen. And your change requests are going to be submitted, changes to scope, changes in timeline, for example, that have to be reviewed and approved. And it's really important to have somebody that has that knowledge and that expertise in terms of what the current terms and conditions of the contract are, to understand what the impact of that's going to be and be able to evaluate that, again, from a time frame perspective, scope, and cost perspective. And that type of expertise needs to include someone from the contracts department. They need to be on the team, as I said earlier, and I think it's a good idea to have them, somebody at a high level from the business and finance, for example, or the contracts department, that's a participant in the, maybe the executive oversight committee or one of the other management committees, because it is such an important part of any project is going to involve a fairly complex contract, because the purchase and implementation of a new OMS is going to be fairly complex from a business perspective, from a technical perspective, and in terms of new terms and conditions, for example, are going to need to be in place. When you're talking about cloud deployments, it's a little bit different than back in the old days when everything was deployed locally or on premise, as we say. And so you could reach out and touch that server and you had more control over it. Now these types of services that we're contracting for, we need to look at it a little bit differently. And that contract management component to the project, it is a part of the project management body of knowledge. It is something that requires some knowledge and expertise. And I think it's an important component that sometimes gets overlooked when we're putting together those project teams and looking to see who needs to be a part of the day-to-day parts of the project, as well as when changes occur, and not just get them involved when a change happens. They need to be knowledgeable about the project, about the scope of the project, about the deliverables. I think they're an important part of the project team.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Lynn, Jerry, and Krista, for your awesome wisdom that was shared with all of our listeners today. Well, folks, that wraps up today's conversation on implementation planning and organization change management as it relates to vendor management system implementation. As we've discussed, success depends on clear priorities, strong leadership, and a thoughtful approach to managing expectations and people. Now, be sure to join us in next time, where we're going to dive into implementation challenges and consideration. We're going to explore topics like user training, adoption of the system, managing scope creep, migrating legacy data, and understanding what it really means to operate in a modern SaaS environment. You're not going to want to miss it.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Sounds of Safety podcast. Be sure to stay connected with the IGIS Institute on LinkedIn and X, and don't forget to subscribe on Apple Music, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to catch future episodes. From cybersecurity to artificial intelligence and deep dives into critical national data sharing initiatives, the Sounds of Safety podcast has you covered. Until next time.